Welcome all. On the 25th of December, 2022, it is Christmas, but we will, all of us, regard it as a celebration of a return to light. We take up this time Chapter 23 in Essays on the Gita, in the first series. The title of the chapter is Nirvana and Works in the World. It appeared on the 15th of June in 1918. The first three pieces in that issue of the Arya were the Life Divine, of course, the Philosophy of Rebirth, then this essay, and then finally, or I should next say, in the Synthesis of Yoga, the Godward Emotions. There would be one more chapter in the first series, which would appear in July. We'll be taking that up soon. And then the second series on essays on the Gita began on his birthday, on the 15th of August, the same year, 1918. He launched that series. In this chapter, he's working mostly in the fifth and sixth chapters of the Gita. And the fifth chapter of the Gita has been subtitled, according to tradition, Karma Sannyasa Yoga, the Yoga of Renunciation of Works. I'm receiving a note that some people cannot hear. None of you can hear. I'm going to proceed as if everything is okay. So we were saying that chapter 5 is called Karma Sannyasa Yoga in the Gita, and the sixth chapter is Dhyana Yoga. These are the two that he'll be primarily taking up here. Continuing the idea that the realization of the Akshara Brahman, of that immutable, eternal aspect of the divine being, does not negate the world, does not negate our action in the world. That we can be free spiritually and act from that spiritual freedom in the world in a way that expresses and pursues the divine will. So, let's get started and see where we go. We'll break this rather lengthy chapter up into three sections. Typically, we've been breaking them up into two, but this time we'll break this into three. We'll still be fine with respect to late January getting to begin to address the topic of the mother and turn to Sri Aurobindo's great book, the Matri Upanishad, the Mother. We begin. The union of the soul with the Purushottama by a yoga of the whole being is the complete teaching of the Gita, and not only the union with the immutable self, as in the narrower doctrine which follows the exclusive way of knowledge. That is why the Gita subsequently, after it has effected the reconciliation of knowledge and works, is able to develop the idea of love and devotion, unified with both works and knowledge as the highest height of the way to the supreme secret. For if the union with the immutable self were the sole secret or the highest secret, that would not at all be possible. For then, at a given point, our inner basis for love and devotion, no less than our inner foundation of works, would crumble away and collapse. So if knowledge of the divine, if abiding exclusively in the immutable aspect of the Atman was the sole object of yoga, then there would be no works and no need for a culmination in love. It's only when works and knowledge are suffused together that they're made synthetic, that knowledge dynamizes itself in work, that the possibility of work expressing adoration in the oneness of being becomes real. Union, utter and exclusive, with the immutable self alone means the abolition of the whole point of view of the mutable being, not only in its ordinary and inferior action, but in its very roots, in all that makes its existence possible, not only in the works of its ignorance, but in the works of its knowledge. It would mean the abolition of all that difference in conscious poise and activity between the human soul and the divine, which makes possible the play of the kshara. For the action of the kshara would become then entirely a play of the ignorance without any root or basis of divine reality in it. On the contrary, union by yoga with the Purushottama means the knowledge and enjoyment of our oneness with him in our self-existent being and of a certain differentiation in our act of being. And here we have expressed again the wonder of Satchit Ananda. Of course, the Gita does not use that term, but there it is. It is the persistence of the latter in a play of divine works which are urged by the motive power of divine love and constituted by a perfected divine nature. It is the vision of the divine in the world, harmonized with a realization of the divine in the self, which makes action and devotion possible to the liberated man. And not only possible, but inevitable in the perfect mode of his being. That is where you have fulfillment. That is Siddhi, where all of this comes together at one point. But the direct way to union lies through the firm realization of the immutable self, and it is the Gita's insistence on this as a first necessity, after which alone works and devotion can acquire their whole divine meaning, that makes it possible for us to mistake its drift. For if we take the passages in which it insists most rigorously upon this necessity, and neglect to observe the whole sequence of thought in which they stand, we may easily come to the conclusion that it does really teach actionless absorption as the final state of the soul, and action only as a preliminary means towards stillness and the motionless immutable. Now, this is, of course, what Shankara in his gloss on the Gita drives at. But the whole of the rest of the Indian tradition rejects that view, and Sri Aurobindo is most emphatic about it. It is in the close of the fifth and throughout the sixth chapter that this insistence is strongest and most comprehensive. There, we get the description of a yoga which would seem at first sight to be incompatible with works, and we get the repeated use of the word nirvana to describe the status to which the yogin arrives. So he will immediately distinguish the interpretation of what nirvana means to the seers around the Gita from what nirvana means to the Buddhist. The mark of this status is the supreme peace of a calm self-extinction. Shantim Nirvana Paramam. And as if to make it quite clear that it is not the Buddhist's nirvana in a blissful negation of being, but the Vedantic loss of a partial in a perfect being that it intends, the Gita uses always the phrase Brahma Nirvana. So in three successive verses, 5:24, 25, and 26, that phrase occurs. We only have one other mention of Nirvana in the whole of the Gita's text, and that's at 6:15. So Sri Aurobindo is absolutely correct. Let's also note, this is interesting from a biographical perspective for Sri Aurobindo, because in 1908, his first great spiritual realization was of Brahma Nirvana, the extinction of his separate self in Brahman. That occurred in Baroda, and it was later, as if this was a preliminary and an introduction to spiritual life, that he had a later and larger realization of Vasudeva, of the divine, transcendently becoming present and manifest in the universe personally, so that everything in the universe expressed that being personally. So impersonality was a resource by which the great person built the cosmos. So being, sheer, abstract, essential being, is not the final answer. It is a mode of being, one of three, as Sri Aurobindo has often asserted, transcendent, universal, and individual. All three are real terms of being. So Brahma Nirvana means attaining the eternal peace of that which is transcendent. But that does not obliterate or rub out or erase the universe. Let us see how he means it. Let's read that sentence again. Let's start the paragraph all over. The mark of this status is the supreme peace of a calm self-extinction. Shantim Nirvana Paramam. And as if to make it quite clear that it is not the Buddhist nirvana in a blissful negation of being, but the Vedantic loss of a partial in a perfect being that it intends, the Gita uses always the phrase Brahma Nirvana, extinction in the Brahman. And the Brahman here certainly seems to mean the immutable, to denote primarily at least the inner timeless self, withdrawn from active participation, even though immanent in the externality of nature. So these are two aspects of Atman which we don't often assess. Yes, there's that transcendence in which there is no other reality than essential being, and then there is that same being expressed imminently in all, impersonally supporting all on its oceanic vast being. We have to see then what is the drift of the Gita here, and especially whether this peace is the peace of an absolute inactive cessation, whether the self-extinction in the akshara means the absolute excision of all knowledge and consciousness of the Kshara and of all action in the Kshara. Excision means cutting out. We are accustomed indeed to regard nirvana and any kind of existence and action in the world as incompatible, and we might be inclined to argue that the use of the word is by itself sufficient and decides the question. But if we look closely at Buddhism, we shall doubt whether the absolute incompatibility really existed even for the Buddhists. And if we look closely at the Gita, we shall see that it does not form part of this supreme Vedantic teaching. Certainly that's true for the Gita and the teaching of Vedanta, if we get away from Shankara and his illusory interpretation of the world. As for Buddhism, the philosophy of Nagarjuna disputes whether we can say anything meaningful about either side, that we can speak meaningfully of a void or we can speak meaningfully of the dance of existence. It is not so simple a question because we're dealing with the duality of languages. And so what is reality after all? One must experience it, to go back to Sri Aurobindo, and one knows through the experience. One knows not through logical processes. The Gita, after speaking of the perfect equality of the Brahman knower, who has risen into the Brahman consciousness, Brahmavid Brahmani Stitaham, develops in 9 verses that follow its idea of Brahma Yoga and of Nirvana in the Brahman. So we're beginning here with 5:20. When the soul is no longer attached to the touches of outward things, it begins, then one finds the happiness that exists in the self. Such a one enjoys an imperishable happiness because his self is in yoga, yukta, by yoga with the Brahman. The non-attachment is essential, it says, in order to be free from the attacks of desire and wrath and passion, a freedom without which true happiness is not possible. That happiness and that equality are to be gained entirely by man in the body. He is not to suffer any least remnant of the subjection to the troubled lower nature, to remain in the idea that the perfect release will come by putting off of the body. A perfect spiritual freedom is to be won here upon the earth and possessed and enjoyed in the human life. Prak sharira vimokshanat. So it then continues, he who has the inner happiness and the inner ease and repose and the inner light, that yogin becomes the Brahman and reaches self-extinction in the Brahman, Brahma Nirvanam. That's essentially 5:24. So what the Gita is exhorting is, first you must get free of ego and desire. That is the extinction of the ego in Brahman, the nirvana, the blowing out of separate existence in the one larger reality. It aims at that. Here, Sri Aurobindo continues very clearly, nirvana means the extinction of the ego in the higher spiritual inner self, that which is forever timeless, spaceless, not bound by the chain of cause and effect and the changes of the world mutation, self-blissful, self-illumined, and forever at peace. The yogin ceases to be the ego, the little person limited by the mind and the body. He becomes the Brahman. He is identified in consciousness with the immutable divinity of the eternal self, which is immanent in his natural being. So again, first we must realize, and where do we realize it? Above, surely, in the eternal, but also surrounding us, all-pervasive, immanent, everywhere at once, that same self. And that's the basis of our natural being. So to realize it at the core of our natural being means that we need not leave the natural being behind in order to have spiritual realization or to conduct ourselves in divine works. So first, the realization, huh? But is this a going in into some deep sleep of samadhi, away from all world consciousness? Or is it the preparatory movement for a dissolution of the natural being and the individual soul into some absolute self who is utterly and forever beyond nature and her works, laya, moksha? Is that withdrawal necessary before we can enter into nirvana? Or is nirvana, as the context seems to suggest, a state which can exist simultaneously with world consciousness and even in its own way include it? Apparently the latter, for in the succeeding verse, the Gita goes on to say, sages win nirvana in the Brahman. They, in whom the stains of sin are effaced and the knot of doubt is cut asunder, masters of their selves, who are occupied in doing good to all creatures. Sarva bhuta hite rattaha. That's 525. So we move from 524 to 525, affirming that it is in the immanence of the divine here that one can experience nirvana, not simply above and beyond, not simply in the transcendent. That, yes, but this too. He continues, that would almost seem to mean that to be thus is to be in nirvana. But the next verse is quite clear and decisive, and this is 526. Yatis, those who practice self-mastery by yoga and austerity, who are delivered from desire and wrath and have gained self-mastery, for them, nirvana in the Brahman exists all about them, encompasses them. They already live in it because they have knowledge of the self. Huh. So they see that self in all beings, a universal, complete manifestation. That is to say, to have knowledge and possession of the self is to exist in nirvana. This is clearly a large extension of the idea of nirvana. Well, it's quite different from the Buddhist, which leaves unexplored what it means to have nirvana. That we cannot guess at, that we shall not say anything about. It is unedifying to ask any questions about that, but get rid of the fiction of the ego, of the composed natural self, and you will experience it. Yes, we all agree, but the Gita goes farther and says that that same reality that you seek to expunge yourself into is present all about, and you can live and move wonderfully well in and through it. Get busy. Freedom from all stain of the passions, the self, mastery of the equal mind on which that freedom is founded, equality to all beings, sarva bhuteshu, and beneficial love for all, final destruction of that doubt and obscurity of the ignorance that keeps us divided from the all-unifying divine and the knowledge of the one self within us and in all, are evidently the conditions of nirvana which are laid down in these verses of the Gita, go to constitute it, and are its spiritual substance. So we can wander a little bit farther away and see that this sarvabhuteshu is also cited earlier in chapter 3 in the 18th shloka, and we'll meet it again in chapter 9 in shloka 29. So, towards his conclusion, thus, nirvana is clearly compatible with world consciousness and with action in the world. For the sages who possess it are conscious of and in intimate relation by works with the divine in the mutable universe. They are occupied with the good of all creatures, sarva bhuta hite, 5:25 and 12:4. They have not renounced the experiences of the Kshara-purusha. They have divinized them. For the Kshara, the Gita tells us, is all existences, sarva-bhutani. And the doing universal good to all is a divine action in the mutability of nature. 6:29. This action in the world is not inconsistent with living in Brahman. It is rather its inevitable condition and outward result, because the Brahman in whom we find nirvana, the spiritual consciousness in which we lose the separative ego consciousness, is not only within us, but within all these existences. Exists not only above and apart from all these universal happenings, but pervades them, contains them, and is extended in them. Therefore, by nirvana in the Brahman must be meant a destruction or extinction of the limited separative consciousness, falsifying and dividing, which is brought into being on the surface of existence by the lower maya of the three gunas. And entry into nirvana is a passage into this other true unifying consciousness, which is the heart of existence and its continent, and its whole containing and supporting its whole original and eternal and final truth. Nirvana, when we gain it, enter into it, is not only within us, but all around, abhito vartate, because this is not only the Brahman consciousness which lives secret within us, but the Brahman consciousness in which we live. That's 5:26. It is the self which we are within, the supreme self of our individual being, but also the self which we are without, the supreme self of the universe, the self of all existences. By living in that self, we live in all, and no longer in our egoistic being alone. By oneness with that self, a steadfast oneness with all in the universe becomes the very nature of our being and the root status of our active consciousness and root motive of all our action. We don't lose anything. Nothing is destroyed. There is no real ego. It's an assembly of natural elements. When they're not needed anymore, we untie the knot. That's all. You still exist. You still move. You still live. But now you live in felt oneness with all beings. You can serve them clearly because your ego is not in the way. Your personal desire is not in the way. Now your action can move forward and not generate a chain of karma of personal karma behind it. There is no such person anymore. So in a way, you freely act because you act in communion with the divine, and you leave no cleanup behind you. Nothing to worry about. Step forward, be lucid. So we'll put a bookmark there, and we'll continue our chapter next time. I know, on the 1st of January, it is going to be New Year's Day, and as with this evening, where we have only a few people with us, we may have only a few with us on New Year's Day, but it will be the first day of that calendar, so we will meet. Let's close with a section from Savitri. This is in Book 2, the Book of the Traveler of the Worlds, in Canto 2, the Kingdom of Subtle Matter. And we'll begin on page 109. Only when we have climbed above ourselves, a line of the transcendent meets our road and joins us to the timeless and the true. It brings to us the inevitable word, the godlike act, the thoughts that never die. A ripple of light and glory wraps the brain, and traveling down the moment's vanishing route, the figures of eternity arrive. As the mind's visitors or the heart's guests, they espouse our mortal brevity a while, or seldom in some rare delivering glimpse are caught by our vision's delicate surmise. Although beginnings only and first attempts, these glimmerings point to the secret of our birth and the hidden miracle of our destiny. What we are there and here on earth shall be is imaged in a contact and a call. As yet, earth's imperfection is our sphere. Our nature's glass shows not our real self. That greatness still abides, held back within. Earth's doubting future hides our heritage. The light now distant shall grow native here. The strength that visits us, our comrade power. The ineffable shall find a secret voice, the imperishable burn through matter's screen, making this mortal body Godhead's robe. The spirit's greatness is our timeless source, and it shall be our crown in endless time. A vast unknown is round us and within. All things are wrapped in the dynamic one. A subtle link of union joins all life. Thus, all creation is a single chain. We are not left alone in a closed scheme between a driving of inconscient force and an incommunicable absolute. Our life is a spur and a sublime soul range. Our being looks beyond its walls of mind, and it communicates with greater worlds. There are brighter earths and wider heavens than ours. There are realms where being broods in its own depths. It feels in its immense dynamic core, its nameless, unformed, unborn potencies cry for expression in the unshaped vast. Ineffable beyond ignorance and death, the images of its everlasting truth look out from a chamber of its self-wrapped soul. As if to its own inner witness gaze, the spirit holds up its mirrored self and works. The power and passion of its timeless heart, the figures of its formless ecstasy, the grandeurs of its multitudinous might. Namaste. Jai Ma. So very good to be with you again.